Excellent. Once again, good evening or good morning, wherever you are joining us in the world. I'm glad you're here. It's going to be a really fun conversation tonight. Hold on 1 second. Excellent. Audio is slated. Awesome. So before we jump into the topic tonight, I just wanted to give you one more reminder if you have not checked it out yet. A week ago Monday, I released the Tapping Success Academy. It has been a labor of love, and it has certainly been a labor. It is something that I've been working on since August. I personally have spent over 300 hours on the project, in addition to a number of other folks. Over the course of 16 different masterclasses, I talked to some of the best change work professionals in the world. The really cool thing about it was, you know, sometimes when you go to a conference and you're like the fifth or sixth speaker in and you get the opportunity to reference all of the talks that have been given before you so the stuff fits together. This happened with this particular project and no one listened to anybody else's interview because it all happened independently. And it was as if we were all on the exact same page. So if you go to the Tapping Success Academy, there's lots of details about that. If you have any questions about it, please feel free to reach out and just drop me a note about that. Awesome. So tonight, what we're going to do is we are going to talk about tapping for clutter and responding to clutter. And this is actually something that came very much out of this particular community. In December and January, in the tapping requests at the end of these classes, there were a number of requests for tapping on clutter. And so I thought that this would just be a perfect opportunity for us stepping into all of that. One thing I think is important to recognize with clutter is the bigger the problem, the bigger the problem. It is one of those things that almost grows exponentially in the way that it becomes a problem in our life. As I mentioned in the email talking about this particular class, a number of years ago when I was at the National Guild of Hypnotism's training, one of the workshops I went to was on hoarding. And the woman who was teaching the class on hoarding said, the way I judge how much a person is a hoarder is by how many feet deep the piles are in their house. And she was telling stories of how she was working with clients where there literally were just little bitty pathways through these homes where things were tacked all the way to the ceiling. And much like fear, it's one of those things that as it grows, it starts to grow in this exponential way. And so once it is something that we have under control, it becomes less of an issue for us to move forward. And when it's really big, it's important to recognize the fact that it is really big. And so as we step into it, it's going to impact our approach and how we are helpful and how we are doing transformation around this particular issue. So oftentimes, clutter often exists because of secondary gain, except when it doesn't. So most of the time when clutter is around, there is a specific reason for that. And most of the time that we're going to spend tonight and the tools that I'm going to be teaching you are going to be helping you around those particular secondary gains. Secondary gain is basically what is a gain that comes along with the problem that I have. And on the surface, it might not seem like that there is a benefit to these things, but as you'll see, there are a number of reasons why clutter will serve us, and I will put serve in quotes or inverted commas. The first is it's keeping us from work. If there is clutter all over the place, it congests our space. And I am not a feng shui expert, and I don't understand it, and I've never studied it, but I do know how much different I feel when I'm working in a clean space. I do know how much better I feel when I am in a tidy space. And my mother is actually joining us this evening, and if you were to ask her, she would tell you that cleanliness and tidiness has never been a disposition that has been something like I am not one of those people that ask, do you hyphenate the word anal retentive? Like, that is not something that exists inside of my experience. But I recognize the value of being in a clean space to the point that either the last thing that I do every single day or the first thing I do at the beginning of the day is I clean my workspace here. I clean my desk just because I know I work in a better way. And so the inverse of that is if we are in a cluttery space, it slows us down from doing work energetically. And it also can be in a circumstance that it gives me a really good excuse not to be working, where I'm futzing around with the things that are going on. Because of my ADHD, when I was a teenager, when it came time for me to clean my room, I would literally have to go pick up the socks, pick up the socks, pick up the socks, pick up the socks. Organize the magazines, organize the magazines, organize the magazines, because otherwise I could spend 45 minutes cleaning my room. I would touch every single thing in my room and my room did not look any cleaner than when I had started. And so sometimes by having a mess that we need to maintain also becomes a really good excuse for us not to be doing the work that we feel like we should be doing. The second is it keeps us from a feared truth. And the word truth there is in quotes. Oftentimes this shows up when we're dealing with financial issues, that we can have clutter and clutter and clutter around where if we cleaned it up, then we would have to be honest with where we were in our financial situation. And so by having all of these piles of bills, of newspaper, of things on my desk, the exact same thing is true, is if I don't clean up my desk, then I don't have to admit that my business isn't as successful as I want it to be because I'm caught and I'm hiding behind all of this stuff that is around me. The third reason that once something gets messy is it is going to get messy again. One of the best investments I made when I moved to New York, and I've replaced it since I moved here, is I got a robot vacuum cleaner. And robot vacuum cleaners are really, really amazing in their ability to chew up cords and destroy anything that is on the floor that should not be on the floor. And so at 3:45 every single day, my little robot vacuum cleaner fires off and it does its thing, which has helped me to keep my place significantly tidier. But it is something that, again, because it is not my disposition, it's something I have to do all of the time. And, you know, it is because there is always going to be things coming in, we're always going to be touching things, it's very, very easy for me to say, well, why bother cleaning up this particular thing? Because it's just going to get messy again. Sometimes we are cluttered because the stuff we are keeping is something that we think is going to be useful. One of my favorite cleaning tactics is when there are things around that I'm wondering whether or not I'm going to need them or not, is to put them inside of a box and put a date on the box. And if a year later I have not opened the box, I can throw the box away without looking at what is inside, because obviously it is not something that I needed. But oftentimes we think, oh, I'm going to need that one little thing. One of the great things of living in 390 square feet is just by necessity, you can't have a great deal of things. And still, I'm amazed every 6 months when I do major cleaning here, the amount of crap that I haul out of here. And inevitably, I'm holding these things and going, well, I used it once, I might want to use it again. And so there is a part of us that doesn't want to get rid of something that is useful. So these are just some of the reasons why clutter sticks around. As we step into the tools and we step into the process, I'm going to show you four different ways that we can actually figure out the reason behind the thing that is holding you back. So how to start? So what I want to share before I share the tools is I want to share some frameworks and some dispositions that I find really helpful when it comes to transforming a space that is cluttered, disorganized, or has too much stuff inside of it. So the first is to recalibrate the goal. Because clean is one of those things that is relative. And what I mean by that is, I'm sure you've been in the circumstance where you have been in a room that you've done a bunch of cleaning and you've been in there for 45 minutes. You're like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. This is so clean. And then you go and you get a glass of water and you come back into the room and you're like, oh my gosh, this place is a disaster. because we first saw the change that had happened in comparison to where we started. It felt like it was so much cleaner because it was, but in a vacuum, when we come back, we recognize the things that are untidy or dirty. And so when we're approaching something like this to recalibrate our goals, to get away from this all or nothing proposition of everything is perfectly cleaned. So one of the goals that we can have is organized. Organized does not necessarily imply that we have gotten rid of anything, but it's in a slightly different order. Some of the times when I am doing stuff, I have a wall of bookshelves over here that you cannot see. Oftentimes when I do cleaning every 3 or 4 months here in my office, I will not get rid of anything. And it feels like I have 20% more space than I did before by simply getting things moved around into a new, more organized space. So recognizing that the goal isn't to get rid of stuff, but the first step might simply be to organize it. Straighten up. It's a very similar thing. It is amazing what you can do on a desk in which you just get things into neat piles and how it takes up so much more less space. I can remember years and years ago reading the story of a husband who he thought for a very, very clever birthday gift for his wife, took a bunch of $1 bills and threw them all over a room. And gave his wife a bag and said, however many of these that you can fit into this bag, you can have. And so she just went in and she just put them all into neat little piles and very, very easily fit all of them into this tiny little bag, because when they were in a neat pile, they were very, very small and took up less space. And so the goal might just be to straighten up. So it's not even necessarily putting things in a new place, but simply tidying the shape of how things are stacked in around us. When we are going through the process of cleaning, oftentimes a really useful first step is simply sorting things into 3 piles. Trash, get rid of, maybe get rid of, maybe keep, or keep. And simply by going through that process, I find by having that middle pile when I'm working through something like this makes a huge difference, because then I'm not having to make a decision about things. But it gives me the ability, even going through this process of just peeling away 10 or 15% of the clutter that is there to get it to move along, can make a significant difference. And as we're looking at these particular tactics, the tools that we are going to use to uncover the emotional resistance to getting rid of clutter, we can use those tools for all of these things. It's not just, I'm going to figure out, because you might be in a circumstance where there's actually an emotional resistance to just getting organized, or just getting straightened up, or just getting things into 3 piles. So what we're doing here is I'm giving you a bunch of lenses to look through the process, because it might be so big, it's hard for us to get a beat on what's going on emotionally. And when we narrow the scope down of what our goal is, one, it might be easier for us to take action, or two, it's easier for us to figure out what the emotional thing is underneath. The third approach, and this is one of my favorite approaches for almost anything that I do, and that is to work to time, not to task. And working to time, not to task means is I am going to work on this for X number of minutes. So it's not, I'm going to work until my desk is clean. It's, I'm going to work on this for 30 minutes. And however far I get in 30 minutes, great. That is simply the objective, because we naturally resist doing tasks that we cannot complete. Because subconsciously, we don't want to waste time and energy on something that isn't fruitful. And so if my goal is to organize my office or organize my desk, and I only have 30 minutes, and I look at it and I go, there's no way this is going to get done in 30 minutes, then I don't start. But if I say, I am going to work on this for 30 minutes, I hit my timer and off I go, I can work on it for 30 minutes. Now, at the end of 30 minutes, it might not look like I've made very much difference, but I have successfully done the thing that I have set out to do. And I find working on any sorts of task, working to time instead of task, becomes a really useful thing to do. So the other thing that we can do, in addition to recalibrating our goals, is focus when doing the work. And this is what we're focusing on. So when we are working with clutter, it is almost always easiest to start with something small. In the Tapping Success Academy interviews that I did, one of the things that Steve Wells said that is still ringing with me months later is the bigger the problem, the smaller the first step. Because when problems are big and complicated, it's hard for us to keep the whole thing in our head. And that could be an organizational thing or an emotional thing. And so oftentimes when we are dealing with cleaning up and decluttering something, it's literally going the piles of papers that are here, not even the piles of paper on my desk, but the ones that are here on my left side, or the thing that is down here on the floor, or the stuff that is piling up by the front door. And so instead of trying to solve the entire problem, choose one really small subset of that particular thing and start at that place. Changing our focuses, again, when we're working to time to task, the goal is progress, not completion. Because the reality is that things are going to get dirty again. Things are going to get disorganized again. And so recognizing the fact that I would like it to be better than it is right now makes it easier for me to work on something, because if I have 30 minutes or 45 minutes or whatever it is to go after the task, by looking at it through this lens, it's going to be a little bit easier. And the last thing when we focus is being okay if we backslide in something like this. Like recognizing the fact that, again, if we go back to one of those beginning premises where I talked about the fact that I am more efficient when my space is cleaner. If my space is clean Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and by Thursday it's become a mess again just because I have a launch or a bunch of clients or whatever that thing looks like, I've had three really productive days. And even though things are messy again, by reframing the goal and saying, okay, I'm going to make progress for now, knowing that if I backslide, that is something that is okay and that is something that I can live with. The handout and the worksheet that I'm going to give you guys access to after I go through all of that has all of these on it, as well as the tools themselves tonight. It's a 2-page handout for you. So those are some of the frameworks, and those are some of the things that I'm thinking about as I'm stepping into this. One, these are tactical ways of approaching clutter so we can clean up. And two, these become lenses that we can look through as we're looking at the emotional resistance to what is going on. So here are the four tools that I like to use to be able to figure out what the emotional resistance is underneath. So number one, talk to the pile. So this is Marjorie. And if you are an American and you are my age, you probably recognize Marjorie. Marjorie was a creation of the Jim Henson Corporation. Marjorie was a giant trash pile from the television show Fraggle Rock. And whenever the Fraggles were in trouble and they needed wisdom, they went out and talked to Marjorie. What was the line? I am banana peels. I am coffee grinds. I am everything. I am wisdom. And so I like taking the thing that I am trying to create, that I'm trying to clean up, and I like to put a little face on it, and I like to have a conversation with it. So for those of you who've been with us in the past, we're talking to a sensation to get feedback from the sensation. What I like to do is I like to take the thing that I am trying to clean up and I treat it in the exact same way. So I imagine the pile of whatever I am going to clean up can talk. And if you need to put your Henson Imagineering hat on and see where the mouth is and all of that to make it easier, like I am forever putting little cartoony faces on the resistance inside of my body so it can talk to me. I find it just easier for me and my imagination to do that. And then we just start asking it questions. Again, we pretend that it can talk. Obviously, it can't talk, but what we're doing here is we are disassociating from our conscious mind, and we're giving our subconscious permission to bring information forward. And again, we ask the pile, what are you worried about? And what will go wrong if you get cleaned up? And the very first time I used this particular technique, it was more than a decade ago. A friend of mine was leaving a position and she was moving on and she was having a really hard time cleaning up her office. And so when we started talking to the papers in the office, which were permission slips and pictures from events and calendars and organizations and agendas from all of the stuff that she was doing with the kids. What the pile said was, if you clean all of this up and you leave, you're saying these young people aren't important. You're saying it to them and you're saying it to yourself because you are moving on. And so it was almost as if the clutter and the detritus that was all over the office was an anchor that was holding her in place because she could not move on until the pile got cleaned up. Oftentimes, when we're in a circumstance, you know, we talked about earlier this idea that the clutter is going to convey to us truths that we don't necessarily want to hear. Oftentimes, clutter will reveal things around financial documents, books, knowing what our debt level is, those sorts of things. And so if we can't get through it, we can't know what is going on. So that is tactic and approach number one. Number two, clutter wall. So what I like to do is imagine everything that I am trying to clean up, instead of it being spread all over the place, I imagine it as a wall that is in front of me. And once I imagine it as this giant wall that is in front of me, I then again ask it questions of what's on the other side and what are you trying to get me to avoid? And so this is very similar to the last technique, but it's another way of taking the thing. And in this case, instead of having us tell us the truth, we're actually visualizing the clutter as a metaphor that is trying to protect us or hold us. It's either trying to hold us back from something or it's trying to protect us from something. And it becomes a really easy way for us to tune in and see what is going on. Magic wand. Imagine you had a magic wand and you just went poof. When I do this, I typically don't imagine it like all just going away, but more along the lines inside of my head is I watch it just like magically organizing itself, where I can actually see the things cleaning up as if we would see in a children's story. And again, what do you feel as it is uncovered? So in this particular case, as things are being cleared up, we're paying attention to what our response to that is. So we're seeing the organization happen, and oftentimes, and I've been surprised, initially I was surprised by this, and it makes sense, is that people oftentimes feel a great deal of anxiety when they visualize things just being cleaned up for them. Once that happens, if the anxiety shows up in the body, now instead of talking to the space, we're talking to the anxiety or the emotion that arises in us as we imagine the things being organized and cleaned up around us. Because sometimes when the thing gets changed for us, it is unsettling for us because subconsciously we like things that are predictable. Subconsciously we like things that are the same. We like the crap we know is better than the crap we don't know. And so oftentimes when there is a sudden radical change, it reveals what the emotional resistance is to that particular transformation. The last one is future to-do list. And with the future to-do list, imagine your space is cleaned. Then imagine that you're going to sit down. What do I have to add to my to-do list now? And so we're giving ourselves the saying, now that this has changed, what new roles, responsibilities, identities, things that I have to do that I wasn't doing? But sometimes our clutter becomes the distraction so that we can fuss with the clutter so we don't actually have to do the work that is in front of us. And what will go wrong if I add these to-do lists? You know, what goes wrong if I add those to my list? And so what we're doing is, again, we're imagining the change, and then we're asking ourselves, what is the negative consequence to do that? And so basically what we're doing through these, the first two, talking to the pile and making the wall, we're getting the information about what is the struggle inside of the pile or what is the pile trying to protect us from. The other two, where we're magic wanding it and we're looking at our to-do list, is what goes wrong after everything is cleaned up. And so all this is doing is this is giving us multiple lenses to look through those things. So before we do some demonstration and we dive into that, are there any questions about what I just shared right there around all of that? We are a small enough group. Just feel free to unmute yourself. I'll call on you just in case a couple of people unmute yourselves all at once, but feel free to do that. Or if you want to type a question into the chat box, if that feels more comfortable to you, that is great as well. Fiona.
Hi. I'm just wondering, have you ever worked with a hoarder?
I worked with a hoarder to the point that they finally felt comfortable enough to reach out to an organization that was going to come and help them do the cleaning themselves. I was not there accompanying them to do everything because it had gotten to the point that it literally required professional help because it was 4 and 5 foot deep all over the place. Like it just was, their space was completely overwhelmed to the point that it was dangerous for them to be inside of the space. And so we got them to the place by doing this and like reducing the anxiety around the different issues that were holding them back, that they then reached out to specialists to do that sort of thing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Other questions, other thoughts?
Okay. Oh,
Darlene. Yeah.
I kind of have two thoughts actually. One is when I need to clean up quickly, I pretend I'm Samantha from Bewitched and I twitch my nose.
Yes.
That's from behind. But my other comment is what comes up is when I think of things that I have to tidy up. I like sewing and stuff. I feel if I tidy it up, I won't get back to it. So it's a fear of, like, what does that come under? Like, why are you smiling?
Yeah. So what it is it's this fear of, like, out of sight, out of mind. And if I don't have it in my space, then I'm going to backslide towards the goal. And so what it is doing is because my life is so busy and my life is so hectic, if I keep this in front of me, then I'm going to do it. But like practically and intellectually, we understand how we get blindness to the things that are inside of our environment. And it becomes something that we just simply stop seeing. So it's not serving the purpose that it is, but it's the fear of exactly that. I'm going to backslide. And so when I'm dealing with something like that, one, I'm going to tap on something around that. The other is I would also be creating a strategy of how can I remind myself to do this thing in a way that doesn't require me to have it out? So for example, I might just like sewing or something like that. You might decide, okay, on Saturday afternoon at 3:00, I'm going to work on this particular project again. Therefore, I'm going to go into my phone and I'm going to set a little alarm that says sewing 3:00 Saturday, which then liberates me to go, okay, I don't need to have this in front of me to do that. And so in that case, I would be approaching it both practically from a strategy of how to clean it up, as well as tapping on the fact that right now I'm in a circumstance that this is out because I'm afraid I'm going to forget it. And then you might start investigating, when are the times in my past that I have forgotten to do the things that I wanted to do? And start unpacking it and looking at the history of, because it might not be around that particular task, it might be a history of, oh, these are things I really wanted to do and time has gotten away from me. And so since I have failed spectacularly in the past, my subconscious is creating a new tactic. I'm going to leave this on the kitchen table so I have to touch it every single time I want to sit down and eat. Maybe I'll remember to do that thing.
Thank you.
Yep. Fiona?
Yep. Yeah, I've just got another question around that, because that's a great thought, because my thing would be similar but different in that, if I pack that away, it's going to be so painful to get it out again. I won't get it out.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. So again, like we're starting to recognize the secondary gain for leaving the clutter out as we do that. Wow. And the first thing is like the instant we pull those thoughts out of our head and we say them out loud, it's like, oh my gosh, that's so silly. Like, you know, and so immediately it diffuses a little bit, but now we have a hook that we can get into with the tapping and recognize the fact, yes, it takes effort to get it out and it's making me inefficient. It's costing me time and it's costing me something every single day. So it might be saving me time with that particular task, but it's costing me all of this other time in the rest of my day and the rest of my life. And so that would be the reframing that I would be doing as I'm tapping on that after I've uncovered that particular type of secondary gain. But that's a great one. Yeah, I love that one. Yeah. I think, Maria, I thought I saw you unmute yourself and then remute yourself again. Do you want to unmute yourself again?
Hi. I was just, and the answer is sort of coming, like listening to all this conversation, but the layers that you could go down through this, as, you know, even as you're, even the language that you're using with recalibrating and focusing, I'm thinking, oh, like I have clutter in my mind, you know,
yes,
sometimes that just is like in the way of me getting the things done on my schedule because it's hard for me just to quiet that. And so,
yep. And all of those tools that I just taught you, all of those lenses, you can do that for the internal clutter inside of your head. So you go, okay, great. I have all of these things floating in around in my head. What does it feel like? And I can remember applying this for the very first time to someone, and they described it of a tornado of paper flying around inside of my brain. Like all of these things going on and whatever. And so as we were tapping, we were just recalibrating the visualization of sorting the papers and putting them into piles and doing it metaphorically, not even like reading the papers, but just knowing the subconscious mind was able to do that bits of organization. And then it calmed down enough that they were to go, okay, great. How do I want to step in and approach this thing? And so wherever we say, I feel cluttered emotionally, thought-wise, organizationally, take these tools and just create the metaphor for what that sense of because you've already started to create the metaphor. My thoughts are so cluttered. Like, like the instant you say that, you have a sense of what is going on inside of your brain. Mm-hmm. And just as there can be secondary gain for me having a cluttered office space, there's secondary gain for me having a cluttered brain. Because I don't have to look at the truth. I don't have to do the real work. I get to be distracted. Like all of those other things come up in the exact same way. And so we take those thoughts, we put them into giant piles, we stick a cartoony face on that giant pile, and we're like, great, cluttered thoughts, what are you worried about? What's going to go wrong? And just getting, again, a chance to just slowly extricate this information, because the subconscious mind lives in metaphor. And so when we're doing this work, stepping into the metaphor does a couple of things. One, it gives us direct access to the subconscious mind. And two, we are notoriously bad eyewitnesses to our own experience. And I can tell you coherent stories as why it is the way that it is, that sound reasonable, that are untrue. And so by stepping into the metaphor, I'm able to get out of my conscious mind into what is really going on, which allows the transformation to happen in a different way.
Great. Thank you.
That was a great example. Like I hadn't thought, obviously I've done work like that before and had not thought about that and putting the presentation together. So that's a great way to think about it as well. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Great. Erica. Yeah.
One of the things that I can hang on to stuff, and it's not that it's not incomplete, is to hold on to memorabilia. Mm-hmm. Like it reminds me of this time in my life. It reminds me of this person, or sometimes it's like, yeah, but I'm keeping this because there was a cost to it. Sometime, whether a personal cost or a monetary value or at the time. So there's this, you know, tchotchkes, you know, where you can pictures or whatever, you know. Yeah.
Yes. You know, My cute little Japanese dog from the temple in Kyoto that, you know, is just a cute little dog that sits at my desk and reminds me of that spot.
Yeah.
Okay. So one thing that I want to be really clear about is I'm not a minimalist. And if you want to be a minimalist, that's okay. Like I have like my, you see a little bit here, and basically like my walls are just covered with art. And typically when I travel, that's what I buy when I travel. You know, I don't get thimbles or spoons or shot glasses. I buy art from local artists. And so it is okay to hold on to things, but what is important is to do an interrogation about why am I holding on to this thing? And I'm allowed to hold on to something for whatever reason I want to hold on to it. And I don't have to have a justification. Like I don't have to say, I am doing this because this is the thing that I would like to, like I get to say I'm holding on to it because I want to, and that's enough. Like that's completely appropriate. Like I don't have to justify what I have in my space to anyone else. And I can do that because I live by myself. Like it's different if I'm sharing space. But like I'm not saying get rid of everything. I'm not even saying get rid of most things. I'm saying that this is an opportunity for us to examine the stuff that we have and to determine what is the value of keeping it around. And again, sometimes the value is I want to keep it. And that's enough. Like saying the value often implies like, I have to justify this is it. It is a memory. It is a, you know, like one of my favorite things in the entire world is I have the bell from my grandparents' 15 room motel. Like it's one of my prized possessions in the world. And it's a cheap little bell, but it's tied to so many specific memories. But I don't have to have a story that is that profound to keep something around. Mm-hmm. You know, like the robot. I bought that from a street artist for $20 in New Orleans. It's just kind of fun. Like, that's it. Like, that's it. I don't have to have any other explanation behind that. So as you're doing this, you know, again, sometimes the goal is organization and curation. You know, one of the interesting things that has happened, you know, as we've had a transition of presidencies in the United States, there is this huge vault of artifacts and art that belong to the executive branch. And when each new president comes in, they get the opportunity to pick and choose and curate the pieces that are in their space. And so they take a bunch of it goes into storage, and the bits and pieces that they want to have out, they have out. And we get to make the choices that we make because of that. So it might be an organization issue. It might not be a get rid of issue.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. Kat.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much. For you to pick this topic, I've been doing a humongous downsizing, clearing, chucking. I've got 22 years of stuff here, right? How this is so brilliant, Gene. Is there a way for me to share? I saw in your email, because I looked back at it again, where it said, you know, and if you just want to purchase the one, you can do that. If I want to tell my 52 friends who are dealing with the same kind of problem that they definitely need to do this, to see this. Yep. How do I do that? Just forward.
Shoot me an email, Kat, and I'll get you squared away. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks.
Because I was looking, and thank you too for saying like, I don't have to justify to myself why I'm keeping it or frankly, why I'm not, you know, like I looked at the couch in the love seat tonight and I thought, why do I have a couch? I never sit on the couch. I don't ever sit on the love seat either, but you know what I'm saying? So thank
you. Yep. Awesome. Any other questions or thoughts before we give it a try and send you off to play around with this and do a little investigation on your own?
I have a game, sorry.
Yeah, darling.
I'll admit, I find, and I know she has really good thoughts, but it's a bit of a rebellion from all my people who want to jam, is it Maria Kondo down my throat?
Yep, absolutely.
And it's more of a rebellion, and she has a lot of great thoughts, but I can do them one by one.
Absolutely,
And it's like, and if people give me like one, I'll think about it. I'll say, no, I'm not going to do it. And then I do it. But there's that almost that whole thing of right now we're supposed to clear everything. And it's so that's going again with Kat and things. I like saying, no, I don't want to. That's fine.
That's right. Well, and the other thing that shows up. So we have a couple of things. One, we have something like that shows up in the zeitgeist. Two, people are inside of their houses to a disproportionate amount of time at this particular moment in history. So there's this really push to clean up. The other thing is that one of the things that is pushed upon us when we are young is this idea of you need to pick up your stuff. You need to clean up your room. And like parents are justified to say that because when we're really young, we are unaware of the consequences that our choices have on other people that we are sharing space with. And so it makes a great deal of sense that that happens. But as we get to a point where we are creating our own identity, oftentimes part of creating our own identity is letting go of the things that we were told to do when we were younger. Next topic next month, actually, we're going to be diving really, really deeply into these stories and these things that we pick up when we are young that serve us really well then that don't serve us now. And so part of that rebellious streak can show up in that particular thing as well. When we have been told our entire life that we are supposed to be organized and we're supposed to be neat and we're supposed to whatever those supposedas are around tidiness, that yes, of course, there is a rebellious streak that shows up that says, you know, there is a part of us that we would choose to do something on our own, but if someone else says we should do it, we immediately don't want to do it because someone else is telling us to do that. And so when we find ourselves in that particular place, the tapping then becomes, I recognize the fact I'm rebelling against this because everybody is saying for me to do this. I am not doing it because they're saying I should do it. I am doing it because I'm choosing it for myself. Doesn't matter what they think. Even if they decide to take credit for the fact that I'm making this change, I am not making this change because they told me to do it. And so what I'm doing is I am uncoupling the idea of why I'm doing something from what I am doing. Because it's really easy for us, particularly when we don't feel like we have agency, we don't feel like we have a voice, or it's a relationship with a really disproportionate power dynamic where someone is constantly telling us what to do and taking pride in the fact we do what they say at any given point. Of course, there's a part of us that's going to want to resist that. And so being really intentional about breaking those two things apart. Other things, let's see here in the chat box. Please re-explain the part of the subconscious working in metaphor. I need some clarification on that. So the subconscious mind is very unliteral. And what that means is it tells stories to convey truth. And I'll give you an extreme example of this. I'm not going to stake any sort of claim on past lives and past life regression and that sort of stuff. But when I have a client share that information with me, it's a useful piece of information for us to be able to uncover a truth. Like just in my practice alone, if the number of clients that I have worked with truly were witches that were burned at the stake in the 1600s, then the only power source in the northeast of the United States at that time period was burning witches because it was the only thing that they needed. Because so many people tell that particular story. Now, what the truth of that story is, when I am my true self, it is dangerous and I'm judged by the people around me. Now, did that happen in a past life? It may happen, it may not. But in the moment of transformation, it is unimportant to me because it is telling something that is true without telling something that is factual. And so our subconscious mind does not work in the realm of facts. Our subconscious mind works in the realm of what it believes, and it tells us stories through that particular lens. So that is what I mean by the subconscious mind is metaphorical, which also means it allows us to do transformation in that exact way. You know, I was working with a client today who had really bad knees, and we had little flying cotton balls that were bringing in healing ointment. We had engineers in there who were creating slick silicone surfaces so the bones didn't rub together, but they slid and they were naturally lubricated. And like, we weren't doing any of those things, but it was giving us a lens to uncover what was going on inside of it, and the pain reduced dramatically. Now, is it possible that he's still knee issues? Of course it is. Like, and it's possible that that particular thing healed or partially healed inside of that. But using the metaphor gives us an opportunity to do something that we can't literally change in the moment. So any other questions about these tools and the processes? Adam, yeah.
Yeah, I had one. Thanks. This sounds really intriguing. The thing I'm focused on is a list of projects for work that I've kind of been putting off and not gotten into order. And yeah. I can already tell just in sort of thinking about these tools that what's on the other side of this for me is going to be some species of fear. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering if, and maybe this is the next part. I'm sort of brand new to this. Yeah. Is there going to be are you going to talk about sort of what to do when you get the feedback from these exercises?
Absolutely.
It seems like these are great tools for information.
Yep. Yeah. So the thing that we were going to do next is we're actually going to do a little demonstration. So if you want to demonstrate it with me and let's just poke around with that sort of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And don't feel obligated to do that. Like, I know the folks in this group, we got lots of folks who will happily volunteer, but if you wanted to do that, that's great. And if not, it's no big deal.
Happy to. Yep.
Okay. Awesome. Great. Okay. So as you think about all of these things that need to get done, okay. How do you visualize those things? Is it a pile of things inside of your head? Is it swirling around in there? Is it stacked up? How do you experience that metaphorically?
Yeah. For me, they're sort of hidden in a landscape, right? So you can look around and it looks like the landscape is just a bunch of rocks on a low hill. But yeah. I know that if I look more closely, just lurking just behind a rock, that everything seems peaceful and fine. There's a task that's not being
Great.
Paid attention
awesome.
To.
Awesome. Okay. So take a nice big deep breath for me. And I want you to imagine going over, and I want you to flip over one of those rocks.
Okay.
And as you do that, what do you notice in your body? Is there tightness in the chest, butterflies in the stomach, chattery brain?
Yeah, tightness in my throat and a little bit of like sort of the earliest sensations of tears, you know, a little sense of kind of overwhelm.
Great. Awesome. So the sensation in the throat and the sensation in the eyes, are they separate sensations? Are they same thing showing up in two places? Trust your instinct, no right answer.
I think the same thing in two locations. Yeah.
Great. Awesome. Is there an epicenter? Does one of them feel like the epicenter?
Probably the tears, the eyes up here.
Yeah. So ask the tears in the eyes, what are they afraid of? What goes wrong?
Like it's too much. Whatever I've just uncovered, it's just overwhelming. There's nothing.
Yeah.
No way
ask it. Yeah. And ask it, what proof does it have it's too much? Don't intellectually figure it out. Ask the sensation in the eyes.
That other things have seemed to be too much in the past. I'm not getting a clear answer.
Great. Awesome. So just tap yeah. with me real quickly, and everybody else, you can tap along as well as we do this. So start at the tippy top of the head and just move from point to point, repeating after me. I recognize the fact. It just feels like too much.
It just feels like too much.
And I can't do it all at once.
And besides this task.
There are a bunch of other tasks that need to be done as well. And so there's a part of me. That is just keeping me safe. By keeping me from diving in. Because if I dive in.
It's going to be too much.
I'm going to be overwhelmed. It's going to impact other parts of my life. And I'm going to fail spectacularly. And I also recognize the fact. I don't have to do it all at once. And I don't have to do it all right now. It's not an all or nothing proposition. And it's okay that it's not an all or nothing proposition. And I give myself permission.
To recognize this fear.
It's just trying to keep me safe.
It's just trying to keep me safe.
It's just trying to keep me healthy.
It's just trying to keep me healthy.
By avoiding danger.
By avoiding danger.
And it's just working too hard.
And it's just working too hard.
There are times in my past.
There are times in my past.
Where it has been too much.
Where it has been too much.
But I only remember the times.
But I only remember the times.
Where it was too much.
Where it was too much.
Because the times that I finished it.
Because the times that I finished it.
I guess I was just supposed to finish it.
I guess I was just supposed to finish it.
And so those aren't a big deal.
And so those aren't a big deal.
So I'm giving more emphasis.
So I'm giving more emphasis.
On the times that it didn't go as planned.
On the times that it didn't go as planned.
Nice deep breath. Great. So what do you notice?
Sort of definitely a loosening up through here. Feels like the breath comes a little easier. The sort of teary sensation is gone. Feel like I'm, I don't know if I actually am, feel like I'm sitting up a little straighter. It all seems a little less daunting.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So that's the process, you know, like we find the thing that feels like it is cluttering ourselves. In this case, it was a clutter of things that needed to be done. And we just have a quick little conversation with it and we unpack it. Now, you know, probably needs a little more tapping than what we did just right there to get you to do that consistently. But you can see how, even at the start of the day, taking a few minutes and just going, okay, great. I'm overwhelmed because this is the things I'm worried about. I recognize that is not the case. I can manage this.
Mm-hmm. Great. So,
awesome.
Thank you.
Cool. Does someone else have a pile or a room or a table or a mess that you'd like to do a little tapping on that we could demonstrate this as well? Kat, I saw you flash your hand. You want to unmute yourself?
I'm telling you, it's my whole house. I'm in this huge downshift clear out. So great. It's everything everywhere.
Okay, great. Okay. So practically let's do the steps that we're supposed to do. I want you to pick a small piece of it, a pile at the top of the stairs, the kitchen table, some stuff that's stacked in one place. I want you to pick just a piece of it. Okay. So which piece are we thinking about?
We're going to do the table that's in my book room.
Great. Awesome. Okay, great. So I want you to imagine the stacks of paper on there and I want you to give it a face. I want you to give it a chance to talk. I want you to Jim Henson it up. And I want you to just ask the pile, what's it worried about? What's afraid of?
Ooh, that I will forget something.
Yeah, and what's it afraid you're going to forget?
Something that could be critical to my or somebody else's well-being.
Yeah. Tippy top of the head and just move from point to point. There's a part of me.
There's a part of me.
That is worried that.
That is worried that.
There's something really valuable in this pile.
There's something really valuable in this pile.
Not just valuable.
Not just valuable.
But critical to someone's health.
But critical to someone's health.
Critical to someone's well-being.
Critical to someone's well-being.
And if I clean this up.
And if I clean this up.
I might accidentally get rid of.
Might accidentally get rid of.
Something that is really important.
Something that is really important.
And so it makes sense.
And so it makes sense.
I wouldn't want to get rid of something.
I wouldn't want to get rid of something.
That is critical to someone being healthy and safe.
That is critical to someone being healthy and safe.
But the reality is.
But the reality is.
If there was something critical in that pile.
If there was something critical in that pile.
I couldn't find it right now.
I couldn't find it right now.
So it doesn't matter that I have it.
So it doesn't matter that I have it.
Because not being able to find something.
Because not being able to find something.
Is no different than not having it.
It's no different than not having it.
And I recognize that if I clean it up.
And I recognize that if I clean it up.
I'm not just going to dump all of it into a bag.
I'm not going to just dump all of it into a bag.
That I'm actually going to sort my way through it.
That I'm actually going to sort my way through it.
And so I give myself permission.
And so I give myself permission.
As a first step.
As a first step.
To move things into three piles.
To move things into three piles.
Things I know I want to keep.
Things I know I want to keep.
Things I know I can get rid of.
Things I know I can get rid of.
Because I don't really need.
Because I don't really need.
The takeout menu from the Chinese restaurant.
The takeout menu from the Chinese restaurant.
That is no longer open.
That's no longer open. Ooh.
And then also create a pile.
And also create a pile.
That I might keep or I might get rid of.
Or I might keep, that I might keep or I might get rid of.
And by going through that process.
And by going through that process.
It's going to take up less space.
It's going to take up less space.
And I'm going to get rid of some of it.
And I'm going to get rid of some of it.
Which is going to make it easier to manage.
Which is going to make it easier to manage.
So that when I do need that life-saving piece of information.
So that when I do need that life-saving piece of information.
I can actually find it.
I can actually find it.
Nice deep breath.
Huge. Thank you.
So just for everybody, okay, so do you see process-wise just how we kind of just step through that in a really, really simple way? You know, didn't worry about the house, didn't worry about everything, started a place that was small and manageable, got a little information from that, and then we even negotiated with the pile. It's not like I'm getting rid of it all. It's like, I'm just going to organize this. I'm just going to spend a little time with it. Because inevitably what happens is, as we go through a process like that, we think we're going to get rid of 15% of the stuff, and we end up getting rid of 30% of the stuff. Like, we actually go further than we think we are. In the beginning, we're being really judicious. And as we touch the 100th piece of paper, it's like, I don't need this. I don't need this. I don't need this. Like, we start to become much more utilitarian in recognizing what is useful and what is necessary and what is not. So,
thank you so much.
Thanks for doing that with us, Kat. Any questions about that process or what we just did right there? Okay, what I'm going to do is, yeah, Lorraine, go ahead.
No, it's Lorna.
Lorna, I'm sorry, my dyslexic brain. Sorry about that.
Okay, yeah. What about when you tap and you don't feel anything? You just tap and tap and tap. No feeling, no anything, no result, no peace, no change. It's as if nothing happened.
Okay, so there are three possible outcomes when we are tapping. Outcome number one, as we tap, we feel better. The discomfort goes down. That's good news. Outcome number two, we tap. The discomfort actually gets worse. When the discomfort is actually getting worse, it's good news because we're tuning in. We're getting more tuned into what is going on. If we are emotionally flat and there's nothing that we're connecting to, the feedback is we're not tuning in the right way yet. And so what it requires us to do is it requires us to think about the problem and reframe it in a way that we can't get to. So when that happens for me, there are a couple of approaches that I take. The first approach I take is, and I ask myself this question, and the question works on me when I ask myself, I know I don't know the answer to this, but what's the real issue I should be tapping on right now? And then piece of information might come popping to mind and it might not. Second thing I do is I tap on the fact that I'm frustrated by the fact that I'm not getting any progress or getting information while I'm tapping. Because if I don't have access to what is going on, I typically have an emotional response to what is going on. Because more than likely, you wouldn't be asking that question if it was just a practical concern. There's probably some small bit, and that's not an accusation, but like when I'm spending time and effort on something and I'm not getting a result, I typically get discouraged or frustrated by that. So I tap on the discouragement or the frustration, and sometimes that takes the edge off enough that it starts to reveal information. The third thing I do when I'm tapping around on something and I'm not getting anywhere and I'm not getting information, I'm not getting anywhere, that's when I work with someone else because I recognize the fact that I am too close to the problem for me to be able to see clearly what is going on. You know, I would consider myself an above average tapper. I think I'm really good at what I do. I think I'm really good at getting to root causes. And once every 2 weeks, I have someone who I tap with, who I pay for time, because I recognize the fact that I need help with my stuff too. Because even though I'm good at this, I'm a bad eyewitness of my own experience, and I'm too damn close to see some of this stuff sometimes. And so if it's something that you're persistently going after and you're just not making any progress, then it's time to reach out to someone. And it might not even necessarily be someone you're hiring, but just someone who is transformationally well-disposed, who can ask you some targeted questions that you might go, oh yeah, actually I hadn't thought about it that particular way. So those are the three approaches I take when I'm feeling stuck about something.
Great. Thank you.
Awesome. Let's see here. I can be great at organizing the piles, even giving them titles and organizing them in different shelves, but then never opening them. So is there a question there, Carol, or is that just a statement of the thing that you're stuck with?
Well, it seems like I can organize all the clutter very well and spend a lot of time doing that, but then I never, or the tools or the supplies or the whatever it is, create the room, get more tools, get more supplies, get a bookshelf. You know, I can spend all the time doing that, but so what? It's kind of, it made me think of it when you said the woman, you know, if you can't find that piece of information when you need it, what good is it? Well, if I have everything beautifully organized, which it's not right now, then, but I don't, you know, so what? Because the end all isn't just to declutter, it's to have access to what you've decluttered, right?
Absolutely great. Yeah, absolutely. And so when we step into something like this, you know, whenever we do anything, it's important to have a goal. Like, why am I doing this thing? You know, am I doing it because I want more space? Is it doing it so I can find stuff easier? Am I doing it because there's a cultural pressure that says I'm supposed to be doing that thing? Like, figure out what the motivation is behind the action that we want. Like, our values should precede our goals. Like, what is the thing that I want? What is the thing that I value? What is the thing that is useful for me? Then I create a goal that serves that value. Then I create a plan that serves that goal. Then I clear the resistance to the steps that I'm not taking inside of that particular plan. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to paste into the chat box a URL that you should be able to click on if you open the chat box, and that will take you to the handout for tonight. Our handout for tonight is two pages. The first page is the lenses that we look through. The second pages are the four processes that we talked about this evening. Let me know if you are having trouble finding that link or if you're having trouble finding that file. It is a light blue file that the image is of a squirt bottle for cleaning up. There was no fun graphics of like piles of paper. So, and I realized that I didn't want to spend like 37 minutes looking for the perfect piece of artwork to go with this little handout like that. I didn't think that was going to be the best investment of my time today in preparing for our time together. As much fun as it would have been, I decided that that was not the way I was going to go. Okay, so what we're going to do is I am going to, once again, I'm going to whisk you off into groups of twos or threes, so that you can get an opportunity to play around with this a little bit. Don't feel like you need to be doing any tapping inside of your group. If you're comfortable tapping with a person, great, but that's not the expectation. This is more about giving you the opportunity to investigate and look through these processes. So in your group, what I'd like you to do, I'm going to send you into groups two or three. I'm going to give you 15 minutes. Again, if I remember and I do this well, I will send you a notification at 5 minutes. I'll send you a notification at 10 minutes and I'll bring you back. In your group, set a timer for 5 minutes, just so be adults and be on top of that particular thing. I will do the best that I can. The last couple of classes I've been, got it 2 for 3. We're going for all three tonight. I believe in myself. I have a gold star in my future if I can do this on the refrigerator. And so what I want you to do is I want you to take turns, and each of you, I want you to think about something that is cluttered, be it a physical space, be it something inside of your mind, and someone else or the other two of you, I want you to ask the questions and kind of lead them through the process to see what it is like to uncover the hidden reasons why that is there. Does the process itself make sense, what I'm asking y'all to do? I'm getting, okay, yes, nods into camera, thumbs up. Okay, excellent. Very, very good. I do a very bad job reading minds in the same room, much less over multiple continents and multiple time zones. Yeah, Erica, you're across an international time zone and three time zones. It's just not going to work tonight. So I'm going to send you off. And then what we'll do is we'll come back, we'll answer some questions about that, we'll answer questions about other stuff, and then some of the things that came up over the course of that, we'll do some group tapping together so that we can really take advantage of some of the really fun limiting beliefs that we uncovered. Let's see here. We are going to assign automatically, and we are going to do that. Okay, great. So I am going to whisk you off your rooms. If you have any trouble, click leave the room to come back to the big room. I'm going to be sitting here. I will see you all shortly, and I'm setting my timer right. Okay. Open rooms. Awesome. You should be getting notifications to be able to choose to click into your room. I will see you all shortly. If you have any questions, pop back out. Let me know. Bye-bye. Welcome back. Welcome back. Let's see here.
May I say something real quick?
Yeah, go ahead, Kat.
Because we got sorted out. But John, yes, connecting the goal to the reason why I'm clearing, that made it so much easier to do. Because if I'm just clearing, well, you know, then I can get to it tomorrow or next weekend or right? But with the goal attached to it, I have a reason and a purpose for getting this done.
Awesome. Good stuff. Okay. Questions, comments, thoughts, knock, knock jokes, bad puns. What'd you notice from the experience? What was surprising? What was easy? What was good? What'd you notice?
I have one.
Yeah.
How to stay on track.
How do I stay on track with what?
Stay on track with the decluttering. This is great today.
Mm-hmm.
Great ideas Kat had. Awesome. I have some great ideas too, how to stay on track. And that's where I fall down royally.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so a couple of things. So the first is, so for me in my life, I have, like, we have a limited amount of willpower every single day. And it's the reason why breakfast choices are so much easier than dinner and after dinner choices when it comes to eating. Is because every single time I make a novel choice over the course of the day, I'm expending some of my willpower. And so in my life, for me, I have, at any given moment, I have two non-negotiables. And that's it. I don't have four, I don't have seven, because if I have more than two, then I don't have the willpower to do those things. And my non-negotiables aren't the biggest things in the world, but they're things that I want to do consistently. So if I was in a circumstance where I wanted to be working on clutter, my space, something like that, I would say my non-negotiable is 5 days a week. I am spending 30 minutes working on this particular thing, come hell or high water. And I have the willpower to make myself do two things a day. And I'm going to make one of them my clutter thing until it becomes habitual. Because at a certain point, these things start to become habits and we're not forcing ourselves to do it. You know, I'm sure you have heard quoted, you know, it takes 14 to 21 days to create a new habit. The study that particular quote is based off of is this really fun study. They created a set of glasses that had lenses and prisms in it so that when you put the glasses on, it turned the world upside down. But it didn't like spin it around, it flipped it. So my right was still on my right, my left was still on my left, but it was up was down, down was up. And they had to wear the glasses every waking moment of the day. And somewhere between day 14 and day 21, when they put the glasses on, the world was right side up. Because what had happened was the neural paths in the back of their brain rewired itself so it could, oh, this is the way dad is coming in. And when they took the glasses off, the world was upside down. And quickly it reverted back to form, so they weren't stuck like that forever. So if I make something a non-negotiable, and I make it a non-negotiable for a couple of weeks, it becomes the thing that is one of the habits that I do. You know, like I finally, in December, finally got some proper workout equipment here in my apartment that works for my space and works for the style of workout and all of that sort of stuff. And this week, I did not think about working out. I've done it every single day for the last 7 days because it was my non-negotiable for a period of time that it is something that became habitual. To the point that this morning, the workout happened this morning at 3:45 in the morning. Because I woke up and I wasn't going back to sleep. And I was like, oh, I'm up. Okay, I guess I'll go work out. And there wasn't any effort to that particular thing. So make it, find an accountability structure that works for you. For me, it's making it a non-negotiable. Some people, it's having an accountability buddy. Some people, it is, if I don't do this, there's a penalty that I have to pay because they're motivated by penalties. But find an accountability structure to that. And inside of the accountability structure, to be gentle with yourself inside of your accountability structure. Like, I don't have to do this perfectly. You know, if I want to do this 7 days a week and I do it 5 days a week, awesome. Great. I did it five more days this week than I would have if I didn't have that accountability structure. And so being gentle with myself where the goal is not to do it every single day. The goal is to make my space more livable by doing a little bit of time. So that's the way I approach it. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, thank you. I like that.
Good. Awesome. Great. Other questions, other reflections from that particular experience? Yeah, Megan.
Jean, could you talk a little bit more about the wall? So if yeah. I was talking about toys or mm-hmm. something like I want a clear clutter of toys. And if I imagine those toys on the wall, like how okay. do you do that process a bit different?
Okay, great. So it's not imagining them on the wall. It's imagining them as a wall.
Okay.
You know, and so then I imagine them as a wall. So I stack them up in front of me. Yeah. And then I ask them, great, what are you keeping me safe from? What is on the other side that you don't want me to see? And sometimes there's information and sometimes they're not, but just turning it into that metaphor. Okay. This is something that is either trying to hold me back from something or it is trying to protect me from something. And so I'm going to ask questions in that regard of the wall. What are you trying to protect me from? What's dangerous on the other side? Or what are you trying to keep me from doing? What's on the other side?
So it's like the barrier. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Barrier. So we're imagining it as it's going, we're making the metaphor as this is a barrier for me to something. And it's either a keep me safe barrier or it's keeping me from barrier. And oftentimes when it's keeping me from doing something, it's keeping me safe because it thinks me doing that thing is dangerous in some way. So sometimes it's there is something on the other side of the wall that is dangerous, or there is something on the other side of the wall that is a good, but it's actually dangerous, and I don't realize that it's dangerous.
Yeah, okay.
Awesome. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does, yeah. The toys are the barrier, not because I was getting the wall and I was thinking paperwork all on the picture on the wall. I'm thinking, how does that help me?
Like, yeah. I apologize for zipping through that and not being clearer in my explanation.
That's great. Thank you.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. Other questions, other thoughts, other things percolating around in your heads? Or things that came up that you want to, like a belief or a something that you want to just do some tapping on that we could do some clearing that I'm sure we all could benefit from.
I'll go with my toys.
Yeah, Megan, yeah, go right ahead. Yeah, we'll get you first, yeah.
So I feel like my toys is a moral dilemma. I want to get rid of them. My youngest son who owned them said that always when he was growing up that he wants to keep those toys for his kids.
Yep.
And then my husband, I think I'll get in trouble with my husband if I get rid of them.
Great. And have you had a practical conversation with your son about him coming to take the toys?
He's not going to come. He lives in my other house in Perth. So we're on a farm and we have plenty of room to keep these toys.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't think that he would like these. They're sort of junk stuff. Some, like you said, the three piles would be good. Yeah. Some stuff to keep, some stuff to get rid of.
Tippy top of the head and just move from point to point. I recognize the fact.
There's some emotional attachment
to the story of these toys.
through the story of these toys.
It's not even necessarily the toys themselves.
It's not even necessarily the toys themselves.
But the statement that I want to give them to my kids someday. And on some level, that's a lovely story to tell. And in a lot of ways, the toys really are just kind of junky.
And in a lot of ways, the toys are really just junky.
And he wouldn't actually want to pass them along. And the reality is... I could probably get rid of half of the toys.
And
no one might even notice. Because it's not even something that people are looking at regularly. And so I give myself permission. To not treat it as an all or nothing proposition. And to do a little sorting. And pick out the ones that are really nice. Or the ones that have a really true sentimental value. Because some of the toys might have a great sentimental value. And other ones are just toys. And so giving myself permission to do a little sorting. Will make it easier to manage. Because I'm not getting rid of them all. But I'm approaching them in a thoughtful way. So they're not just there. But they're there in a way that I know. And I help to create. Nice deep breath. Okay, so what do you notice first pass through?
I feel that I'd be sneaky doing that. I feel like I don't have permission to get rid of those toys.
Great. Okay, so what would happen if you asked for permission?
I think that I'd be exhausted with the discussion with my husband to do that. It feels like I have a right to get rid of them because it's my house, but that he has a right to have a say in this stuff too. But yeah, there's a lot of conflicting things going through with that.
Yeah, tip top of that and move from point to point.
I give myself permission. To recognize the fact. Living in shared space. Creates conflict. Only because.
We are different people. With different agendas. And I also recognize the fact. I don't want to actually make a big deal of this. Because it's probably not the biggest deal in the world. And I don't want to be in a circumstance. Where I have to have long conversations. About 20-year-old toys.
It feels like now, Jean, that I'm willing to get rid of other people's stuff in my family.
Yeah.
But my stuff goes last. I'm not willing to get rid of my stuff.
It is much easier for me. To clean out other people's stuff. Because it's just stuff. But my stuff. I have a real relationship with. And there's meaning. And there's sentimental value. And therefore it's much harder to move on. Even if I don't have a sentimental attachment to something. If it is mine. I have a relationship with it. And that's a completely different thing. And on some level. It makes sense. That I want to keep my treasures. And get rid of your junk. And the definition of treasure and junk. Has to do with the relationship to the object.
has to do with the relationship to the object.
And not the object itself.
And not the object itself.
Nice deep breath.
Now I'm seeing all of my house is full of my stuff, and my husband barely has any, and my kids barely have any.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that word relationship. I feel like I want to tap on the relationship to something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the nice thing about the word relationship is relationship is a value neutral word. You know, I have a relationship to the bodega where I get breakfast sandwiches at. It's not a deep relationship. It's not a lasting relationship. It doesn't give me meaning, but there is a context in how it fits into my life. And so relationship is just, how does this fit into my life? And getting an opportunity to evaluate that. And the other thing as you do this is to like being able to, when we look at it in terms of relationship, we have a relationship to our stuff. And then we have relationships to each individual pieces of the stuff. And so by looking at the relationship at a pile, at a type, at an item level, is going to make it easier to pry it apart and make it easier to navigate.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Good stuff. Great. Who else had something come up that you want to go after and do a little tapping on?
I have something.
Yeah. Yes, go for it.
Okay. Hey, what about if the clutter reminds you of things undone and makes you either feel regret or failure for not having
done it? Yeah.
Not having done it, you know. I think that's my issue. I have piles of things I wanted to do, excited, blah blah. 20 years later it's not done.
Yeah. But,
and I still think
okay.
People may want to.
Yeah. And so is the dealing with the clutter a final admitting of defeat? Or yes. Is dealing with the clutter an admitting that I failed?
Yes.
Okay, great. Tippy top of the head, move from point to point. I recognize the fact.
I recognize the fact.
There are unfinished projects all over my life.
Yeah, unfinished projects all over my life.
Because we have unfinished projects in our lives.
Because we have unfinished projects in our lives.
And the stuff that is here.
And the stuff that is here.
If I deal with it.
If I deal with it.
I have to admit defeat.
I have to admit defeat.
I have to admit that I failed.
I have to admit that I failed.
But the reality is. Some of the things I moved on from.
Some of the things I moved on from.
I moved on from them not because I failed.
I moved on from them not because I failed.
But they just don't fit into my life anymore.
They just don't fit into my life anymore.
They're not something that I actually want to do.
They're not something that I actually want to do.
But there is a part of me.
There's a part of me.
That feels like since I made the commitment.
Feels that since I made the commitment.
25 years ago, to do this thing, I have to do it.
To do this thing, I have to do it.
But I am a slightly different person than I was 25 years ago.
And I'm a slightly different person than I was 25 years ago.
And the world is a slightly different place than it was 25 years ago.
And the world is a slightly different place than it was 25 years ago.
So I'm allowed to change my mind.
I'm allowed to change my mind.
I'm allowed to move on.
I'm allowed to move on.
I can mourn the fact.
I can mourn the fact.
I didn't get everything out of the project that I wanted.
Didn't get everything out of the project that I wanted.
I can be disappointed that it never came to fruition.
I can be disappointed that it never came to fruition.
And I can move on to something else that is more fulfilling.
And I can move on to something else that is more fulfilling.
Because it's not about doing everything I ever said I wanted to do.
Because it's not about doing everything I said I wanted to do.
Instead, it is about.
Instead, it is about.
Doing the thing that makes the most sense for me now.
Doing the thing that makes the most sense for me now.
Nice deep breath. How's that feel?
relief.
Good.
Thank you.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Thank you.
And that's again, another one of those hidden pieces of resistance that we hadn't talked about to this point, but saying, ooh, if I'm moving on from this thing, I have to admit the fact that it was never done and I failed at this thing. And that's, you know, that's a really powerful piece of resistance. So it's great you were able to uncover that.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Cool. Anybody else?
One of the things
that
we were chatting about, we have our group had a lot in common, each of us. But one thing that came up was letting go of like a bunch of stuff. I have boxes of stuff from my teaching and when I retired. And it's like the identity that is
absolutely
attached.
Yes,
the identity that is attached to like it makes. Like, is that part of like the relationship or is it?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Because, you know, it feels like I'm getting rid of this part of my life. I'm throwing it away.
Yeah.
And the reality is that your memories are not going to wash away with all of those boxes. You know, all that stuff isn't sucked out of your brain when that happens. So just tap on that, tippy top of the head, move from point to point. I recognize the fact. That there are lots of things that I'm keeping. From a past part of my life. That was really, really important. And there's a part of me that feels. If I throw it out. I'm throwing out that part of my life. I'm saying it's not important. I'm saying it's no longer a part of me. But it is impossible. To take my experience as a teacher away. Because that is knitted into me at a cellular level. In who I am. And in the memories I have. And it is appropriate for me. To hold on to some remembrances. Some physical things from that time. Which helped to bring back the memories. But I don't have to keep it all in order to do that. That there is a good chunk of it. That if I got rid of it. Wouldn't touch my memories. Or touch my identity. And so I give myself permission. To sort it into three piles.
Okay.
Things
I can get rid of.
Things
I might get rid of.
And things I'm going to keep. And as I do that. I'm going to recognize. How much of the identity. Is actually wrapped up in the things. And how much of it is not wrapped up in the physical objects. And it's not an all or nothing proposition. And I don't have to do it all by Saturday afternoon. But I'm allowed to think about it. Which gives me a great opportunity. To really appreciate that time in my life. Nice deep breath. How's that feel?
Yeah, it feels a lot less heavy.
Good. Yeah. Because oftentimes, like when we a piece like that, like it can show up where it feels like a shackle around the ankles or like the old lead thing that they used to lay on us when they gave us x-rays at the dentist office, where it's just like, you know, holding us down in that particular way.
Yeah.
You know, and being able, again, to divorce the identity from the item and recognize what I'm getting rid of and what I'm not getting rid of.
Right. Right.
You know, because, and again, it, part of it is like the way the brain works is when we see something, it triggers the memory. When we hear a particular song, when we smell a particular type of bread, like these things that trigger something inside of us. So because it is a trigger, we assume it is equated. And there are multiple ways we can trigger that, and we don't need to keep them all, and it gives us a way to navigate it in that particular way.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Great. Awesome. Anybody else? We've got time for one more as we're closing in on 10 o'clock. Yeah, Carol.
So the piles of stuff are actually different projects, and I can organize each of them, but then I don't go forward with any of them. And I realized in the little breakout group, so the one that I've been, I guess it, I should stop trying to, I'm trying to be vague because I'm scared. But so I'm trying to write this picture book. I'm also doing a lot of art and poetry and in various groups. And I've been focusing mostly on the picture group, but frankly, it's the one that I enjoy writing the least, even though I like the stories, but it doesn't come, it's the most, it's not as free flowing as the other ones. And anyway, what I realized is that it's not about the picture book. It's about my relationship with my mother and that, to do it feels like to be close to her and to honor her, because that was one of the few things we shared when I was really, really little. We'd walk to the store, but I had a little ritual. We'd get a golden book and come home and read it. And so, but that doesn't quite move me to knowing where, okay, so now I get why that's so important, even though I'm not, but that doesn't make me make it any easier to give it up. In fact,
sometimes we see the reason why we're doing something and we see the reason why we're doing something. Like, you know, it's kind of like me as I am, you know, clearing out a canister of Pringles going, yeah, I'm really frustrated right now. And I know I'm really frustrated right now. And that does not stop me from eating the Pringles chips as I'm doing that. Like, I'm self-aware. Just because I'm self-aware doesn't mean I make a different choice. It just means that I'm self-aware. Sometimes when I'm self-aware, I make a different choice. Sometimes when I'm self-aware, I don't make a different choice, and then I beat myself up for not making a better choice because I'm self-aware, and almost wish I wasn't self-aware because then I wouldn't beat myself up. Tippy top of the head and just move from point to point. I recognize the fact.
I recognize the fact.
That there are emotional reasons.
That there are emotional reasons.
Why I'm clinging to this particular project.
Why I am clinging to this particular project.
But at the exact same time.
But at the exact same time.
The project itself.
The project itself.
Isn't what I would choose first.
Probably isn't what I would choose first.
And so there's a conflict.
And so there's a conflict.
There's this emotional desire to do it.
There is a strong emotional desire to do it.
And I have lots of other desires as well.
And I have lots of other desires as well.
And I give myself permission.
And I give myself permission.
To recognize that I can honor this relationship.
To recognize that I can honor this relationship.
And stay connected to this relationship.
Stay connected to this relationship.
Doing a different task.
Doing a different task.
Just because I have the emotional attachment to this task.
Just because I have the emotional attachment to this task.
It doesn't mean it is the only task that I can share that emotion.
It doesn't mean it's the only task that I can share that emotion.
And so I give myself permission.
And so I give myself permission.
To explore different ways.
Explore different ways.
To cultivate that memory.
To cultivate that memory.
And to continue to kindle that relationship. And
to continue to kindle that relationship.
Because I can do that.
Because I can do that.
In multiple ways.
In multiple ways.
Because it was a multifaceted relationship.
Uh, I don't know that it was.
Mm-hmm. I give myself permission.
I give myself permission.
To know that I can create new rituals.
To know that I can create new rituals.
And new attachments.
And new attachments.
To remember someone.
To remember someone.
Sometimes those remembrances.
Sometimes those remembrances.
Are because of something we shared.
Are because of something we shared.
And other times those remembrances.
And other times those remembrances.
Are about how we connect.
Are about how we connect.
To that space.
To that space.
To that ritual.
To that ritual.
Nice deep breath. And if you're looking for like a metaphor of thinking about it, the so if you go to here in New York, if you go to the World Trade Center Memorial, it literally is the footprint of the two buildings. And so there's a specific attachment to the place. And I lived in Washington, D.C. for 11 years, and one of the most sacred places in Washington, D.C. is the Vietnam Memorial.
Yeah.
And the Vietnam Memorial does not have, other than the people whose names are captured there, it doesn't. The space is not intrinsically connected to the experience of the Vietnam War. It was fought somewhere else by people from all over the country. No decisions were made on that spot. They were made in Washington, D.C., but they were a different place. But it was, and sacred is truly the word I would use to describe that place. It was one of my favorite places when I was a college student. But it was created because people decided that was the place of remembrance. It wasn't because that was the place of remembrance. And so give yourself permission to create that connection and remembers however you want, which can then liberate you from the way you think you have to be or the only way you can be doing it at this particular point.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Excellent. Very good. So a couple things. Number one, if you haven't checked out the Tapping Success Academy, go check it out. It's awesome. I literally cried after doing one of the interviews because they were so good. I did it in front of Carol Luck. It was a little embarrassing, but I've gotten over that particular thing. Number two, Sunday at noon Eastern time, I'm going to be teaching the same content up front like I did tonight, different question and answer, different demos, different small groups. If you want to come back, you're certainly more than welcome to do that. On Monday morning, you will receive an email that includes the links to the stuff that we covered tonight, as well as the link to the class on Sunday. So if you don't show up, you can still have access to all of that stuff. I can always be reached, Gene@tappingqna.com. Let me know how I can be helpful. This truly is one of the highlights of my month. I love these classes. I love how y'all show up, are engaged, and like it just makes me happy. I woke up this morning part of it knowing that I got to do this tonight, which is just always, always so good for me. So until Sunday or until next month, I hope you have a great night or a great morning, depending on where you are in the world. And I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.